the perspective of the motor carriers. The motor carriers are the trucking companies that typically have 1, 2, up to 100 trucks. And if we look at the road freight transport sector, we see that it's a commoditized sector. It's very easy to just buy a truck, get a license, and get started. So the competition is heavy, and generally, these motor carrier operators are known for having a low degree of efficiency, a low degree of operational efficiency, and to have a large potential for improvement. And improvement is highly relevant for road transport, because at current, the greenhouse gas emissions from freight transport account for 14% of the global emissions. And we can see that in several developing countries or oil-producing countries, there is a 5% yearly increase in oil consumption in these places. And also, if we look at the mega cities, the number of transport doubles every seventh year. So there are several factors making it relevant to actually try to improve road transport operations. Well, in worst case, we see in this picture that we have a truck distributing goods, and as we can see, the fill rate here is just by a quick visual 5%. That means that the driver's time is spent on just delivering a small amount of goods, and also he's wasting diesel. So whenever in countries where the wages are very low and where fuel is cheap, transport waste is abundant. But when we look in the literature or look at what other researchers have presented in this area, we see that there's been very little development to the trucking sector. Basically, what we see is that similar companies, the road transport operators, are mimicking each other. So they're becoming very similar, and they're spending very little money on developing or learning to improve. The authors or researchers that have actually dealt with trucking, they have mostly looked at it from a mathematical optimization perspective or from a technology perspective. And that is not relevant for developing countries or for small, medium-sized enterprises in the developed world. It is not possible to buy a device for $1,000 to track a piece of goods worth $100. So what are the options for small and medium-sized enterprises or carriers in developing countries? Well, what I'm suggesting here is to use the lean concept. The lean concept originates from the Japanese manufacturing industry, and the idea is that every activity not adding value is classified as waste. So the goal is to reduce the time and the material that does not bring value to the end customer. So also the principle of flow, that people should not be waiting for each other. Waiting time is a big waste. And also continuous improvement as an important factor that help companies to improve these thoughts. And lean has been practiced not only in the manufacturing sector, but also in healthcare or in logistics. A sample was a couple of years ago, Ford Logistics were very proud over having 10,000 errors per each million orders. At the same time, Transfreight, a Toyota-owned logistics company performing exactly the same services, had 4.3 errors in 1 million rows instead of 10,000. And these are the differences between actually applying these thoughts and not applying them. But up until now, these lean ideas have not been studied in the context of road transport operations. So the research question here has been, how can methodological improvements reduce waste in transport operations? And this is inspired by this lean concept. And I'm focusing on small, medium-sized enterprises and operators in either in developing countries or in developed countries. And as I said before, the focus is road transport operations and the motor carriers. So the methodology employed here was an interview study of 15 experts. Those experts were CEOs of carriers, truck manufacturers, and the experts that are employed at truck manufacturers. I'm coming from Gothenburg, Sweden, and as perhaps you might know, we have the two huge truck manufacturers in Sweden, Scania and Volvo, and they are both very heavily involved in understanding the requirements and the businesses of the carriers all over the world. And they are specifically interested in the developing countries, since the market is already saturated in the developed countries, and they're not making any money from selling trucks at those markets anymore. So we also interviewed transport service buyers and lean experts. We also carried out 30 case studies. Well, I'm not going to go through 30 case studies. I've selected one case study here to show how these methodological improvements can increase efficiency. This is research that we have been carrying out now for 5 years, and we have been doing a lot of observations, actually going with the drivers and measuring their entire working day in a Tayloristic manner. So measuring every activity they carry out and measure the potential for improvement that could be achieved. I'm just going to give you a sample of how wasteful these transport operations can be. At this particular occasion, I asked the motor carrier, I said, I want to go with your best driver. I mean, the truck driver who's the absolutely most efficient guy you have. So this is just an excerpt. I'm starting when I'm observing these activities, I give them a sequential number. And if we start at activity number 26, upper left, well, then George, he has construction material. That's the goods that he's due to deliver today. He can't seem to find a construction site where he's supposed to deliver these materials. So he spends first 15 minutes asking people, where is this construction site? After that, he makes a couple of phone calls, and that another 5 minutes pass on that. And then, well, he realizes that, oops, I'm kind of wrong. I need to turn the truck. And turning a truck with a trailer is not easy business always, because you have to go to a place where you can actually turn. And so he spends another 16 minutes just to turn the truck to return to the same place where he's going. So unfortunately, I couldn't measure the amount of wasted diesel in this case, but the amount of wasted time here is substantial. Anyway, what happens then after a while is that he realizes that the customer had ordered a truck with a crane, but he realizes that his truck doesn't have a crane. So he's been driving for 3.5 hours to this destination, and now he has to drive 3.5 hours back without having delivered any value to the customer. And this is very typical worldwide for the road transport operators. Because freight transport operations, when carried out by road, are generally cheap. And the people having these companies are not educated. And that goes, that's all another worldwide phenomena. These are typically truck drivers themselves, that they buy one truck and then they buy a second truck, etc. And then all of a sudden they might have 100 of them, but they are not in a structured way working with improvements and trying to reach a higher efficiency of the operations. Another quick sample. This was a happy guy. When we're talking about route optimization, that's of course a very important aspect from environmental perspective, because the further you drive, the more emissions you create, the more time you waste, and the more time the customer has to wait to get his delivery. In this case, this very nice driver, he had a very special route algorithm. And that was that no matter what customers he had to deliver goods to, he would always make sure that his route around 9 o'clock, he would never miss coffee break with his sister, and 12 o'clock, he would never miss lunch at his parents' house. So, of course, that led to several hours of a tremendous amount of diesel wasted every day. And he's not unique. This is more a rule than an exception. And up to date, I have collected around 2,000 complete days of driver's observation. So there's a massive empirical data amount behind these. So getting back to the interview studies and these experts that we selected, we asked them, so how can carrier operators actually improve? What are the measures that they can do to reduce the operational waste? I'm not going to go through this whole table, but an important thing here would be, for example, that to establish collaborations with the destinations where you're unloading. For example, if you're frequently unloading at one customer site, make sure to create collaborative arrangements in order to enable a quick unloading process. Many times, damages on the equipment, the cost of the damage would sometimes be in parity with the profit of the company. So these operators are generally having a very hard time being profitable. Well, as you have seen from the samples, it shouldn't come as a surprise due to the inefficiencies that they're facing, but nevertheless, many of them are going out of business. We see that especially in Northern Europe, that about 5% of the operators are going bankrupt every year. And if they would improve their operations, not only would the sustainability, I mean, the financial and the environmental and the societal would benefit from the road transport operators improving their efficiency. So in the case study, we looked at one company actually working with continuous improvement and having driver development programs, having a regular feedback loop with the drivers, discussing on how they could improve their efficiency, and also having programs for rewarding drivers that would not damage goods or would try to drive efficiently. So after 8 years of running this program, up to date, they have actually decreased the number of delivery errors and accidents by 56%, and a 4-liter diesel consumption decrease for each 100 kilometers. And this is actually without any technology, just methodology, and it's applicable worldwide. So what I would like to conclude with here is that carrier operations are inefficient, and there's a large potential for improvement. And these improvements are feasible, really worldwide. And unfortunately, previous literature has been very much focused on technology or other aspects of improvement work that are not applicable for developing countries. But still, we need to test these approach to developing countries. So actually I'm working very closely with the research team at Volvo, and we have funding available if there would be so that if anyone would like to cooperate on actually testing this in a developing country, we would be more than happy. My colleague here, Sakrisson, he's actually testing this methodology in Ethiopia at the moment. And we still don't have the preliminary results from that, but we hope to see that it's applicable there as well. So, well, finally, I would like to thank the University of West Indies and my research colleagues and Trafikverket, that's the Swedish national agency for road administration, I think it is. Well, anyway, they fund me, and so do the European Commission. So, thank you. Well, now it's me again because I'm presenting my colleague's paper. So, this is a paper by colleagues Wendela Santén and Sönke Behrens, and it's entitled Assessing Actions Towards Sustainable Logistics, a Framework. So, at Chalmers University, we have a very large center for transport research. That research includes both societal aspects like traffic analysis, injury prevention, accident avoidance, as well as the more supply chain logistical research aspects that you can see in blue here, and then the more technological aspects on more fuel efficient, more fuel efficiency, etc. That's denoted with red here in this picture. So, what we have gotten is we got a lot of funds from the government to establish a North European Excellence Center in the area of transportation. And that meant that we started a couple of new projects. And my colleague, my colleague Wendela, this is actually the perspective she is taking in her project. She's having a system perspective and she's looking at integrated logistics sustainability. What I was talking about just in my paper was just focusing on the transport operator here, the lower part. But she takes a look at all the actors together and how they can cooperate to achieve sustainability. The purpose of her paper is to take a first step towards developing a framework, having a holistic approach on sustainability and logistics. And there it comes to including not only one sustainability aspect. We've seen that a lot in the transport research the past 10 years. Focus has very often been only on the financial aspects or on sustainability aspects. Many times, technologies, of course, contribute, but they have too often been in focus. And many times, researchers tend to forget the holistic view here. And so her aim is to highlight the interdependencies between actions and between actions and sustainability goals. So her frame of reference that she's using is, well, first the sustainability. I'm not going to go through. I hope everyone knows what that means. And freight transport operations. She's not looking at passenger transport operations. We have left that out. So, and also the demand for transport is increasing continuously. So we see this, the driving factors are to be like longer, I mean, we have a longer distances, less inventory, shorter lead times, etc. And that leads to more frequent shipments. So, and there has to be an avoid, we have to try to avoid sub-optimizations. Well, I can give a sample of that. If we look at, as we heard in the previous section here, the lady was talking about how, what a big greenhouse gas emission, what a big part of that was created from air transport. If I take the Swedish operator, SAS, Star Alliance member, do you know which is the most common passenger for SAS, accounting for some 50% of the revenue? Well, the typical passenger is a fish from Norway. And where is this fish from Norway traveling? Well, they catch the fish mainly in the North Atlantic. It's transported by boat to Norway. It's loaded onto airplanes and sent to China. In China, they process the fish, make fillets and whatever they do of them, packet them and send them back to Norway. So the fish, they are traveling more than the people in Northern Europe. And of course, if we are going to decrease the environmental impact of this, well, it would be inappropriate to start a discussion on, we need to have better engines at the airplane. That would be the wrong angle to attack the problem, but we need to start on a higher level. How can we avoid sending fish in such huge amounts around the world? Well, maybe the next step would be, how can we, probably we will not make the Norwegians work for lower wages, but maybe we could use temporary workforce or find other workers closer by. So there's a need for a holistic approach here. So in her paper, she has focused actually on the economy and the environmental aspects of sustainability. Her aim is that she will involve society later on. This is work in progress. But she's looking at the decision areas of logistics and transport. And for those of you who are not familiar with these terms, logistics includes the whole process of bringing raw material to finished goods to a customer, whereas transport is the physical movement and changing mode. For example, unloading and loading is also part of transport. So what she has done is actually try to structure the different goals of sustainability, of environmental sustainability and logistics goals. So what we can see here is that, well, it's pretty obvious actually. Customers want low transport cost. At the same time, we know that rail is usually much cheaper to transport over in comparison to truck. But if we transport by rail, we will have very high tied up capital costs because we need to build the actual railroad. So I'm not going to go into this detailed aspects here. Please consult the paper. So if we here look at from a sustainability perspective, what she's mentioning here is that first of all, we need to look at the material flow. If we go back to the fish sample, we need to first look at the sourcing and the production and distribution network. That's the first step. And then as a second step, we can design the transport network according to a more sustainable plan of sourcing and production. In the next step, when we're deciding how is the actual material flow going to look in the network we have designed, then we can start to look at the vehicle flow as the next step. So the whole idea of this model is to actually try to focus on where should we start and where should we end in order not to just spend millions and millions on route planning when the issue is another. So she has suggested a couple of direct relations between logistical decisions and environmental effects, and some indirect relations. In this case, it's pretty straightforward. The customer service, well, the customers, they want to have the goods when they need it, at the right time, at the right place, etc. And they want to be flexible. And at the other hand, in logistics, you need to shorten the lead time in order to meet these goals. So what is outlined here is the effect of material flow decisions on environmental goals. And she's also outlined transport flow decisions on economical goals. I'm not going to go into detail on them. So finally, in this paper, she's landing in two propositions. One is that decisions in the transport level have a direct effect to both logistical and environmental goals, while material flow decisions are of major concern for logistical goals. And second, logistic systems that integrate material flow and transport flow decisions making will be more successful in meeting logistical and environmental goals, thus leading to more sustainable logistics. So for further research, she's looking to test this in a test case, actually, where she is going to try to implement this model from top level to a more detailed operational level. So she's concluding the paper by stating that the first step towards a framework that her contribution is a first step towards a framework highlighting relations between decision areas and between decision areas and goals. And sustainable logistics should include actions on all levels, not just the transport level. And there's a need for better knowledge on logistics actions' impact and the environmental goals. And we also need to identify the key factors in each decision area. So, finally, they apologize that they are not here. Well, I would say, stupid them. They only have themselves to blame. But maybe you will meet them next year. Thank you.
Thank you, Henrik, for an enlightening presentation, or two presentations. One focusing on inefficiencies in the transportation operations and taking a look at the holistic approach to sustainability in the transportation systems, using logistic systems to ensure that you have efficiencies in those in transportation systems. Our third presenter is Mr. Kellon Roach from the University of the West Indies. And he is looking at bridging transportation gaps in Latin America and the Caribbean, prospects and potential for marine transportation cooperation in Trinidad and Venezuela. So, Mr. Roach.
Thank you, Chair, and a very pleasant good evening to everyone. I'll be presenting to you, as you said, a paper entitled Bridging Transportation Gaps in Latin America and the Caribbean, Prospects and Potential for Enhanced Maritime Transportation, particularly with regards to Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela. Now, my presentation is ordered as follows. I'll first begin by briefly setting the context in which my paper is situated. I'll then go on to illustrate the importance of maritime transport to the global economy, to the Caribbean, and to Latin America. I'll then go on to briefly discuss the traditional relations between Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela. Then I would move straight into identifying some of the prospects for enhanced maritime transport between Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela. And finally, I will conclude. Now, to begin with, traditionally, Latin America and the Caribbean has often been referred to as distant cousins, despite its close geographic proximity. Now, several scholars have attributed this distant relationship to a number of factors: mistrust and antagonism, border disputes, cultural distance, etc. However, as we near the second decade of the 21st century, the global political economy is emerging with a different face. Greater and more diverse areas of cooperation are increasingly being sought by Latin American and Caribbean leaders. This is reflected in a number of instances, most notably in three meetings On the first one, the Latin American Caribbean Summit on Integration and Development. Sorry about that. Well, Integration and Development in Bahia, Brazil in 2008, which may I add was the first of its kind and included no external influence such as Europe or the US. The second meeting was the Unity Summit, which took place in Cancun, Mexico in 2010, where there was a conceptualization of the newest regional organization, that of the CLACS, which stands for the Community of Latin America and Caribbean, and thirdly, the Brazil CARICOM Summit. Now, it is important to note that while these new areas of cooperation identified by the leaders, including energy, infrastructure, security, etc., are indeed commendable, the area of maritime transport must not be overlooked, especially for the regions of Latin America and the Caribbean, which I'll get to shortly. But before I go on to the regions themselves, let me just say that maritime transport is of great significance to the global economy. This is because maritime transport accounts for over 90% of goods traded globally, thus making it the main mode of international transport for goods throughout the world. And just to illustrate the resilience and importance of maritime transport in the international political economy, let me say that despite the financial crisis in 2008, growth of international seaborne trade continued, although at a slower rate of 3.6% in 2008 as compared with 4.5% in 2007. And according to UNCTAD, the volume of global seaborne trade for 2008 totaled some 8.17 billion tons. Now, in coming closer to home, as I stated previously, maritime transport is especially important for the Caribbean region, more than any other region in the world. Why? Simply because we exist as Caribbean islands in the Caribbean Sea, and therefore heavily reliant on seaborne transport for goods, both for imports and for exports. In fact, maritime transport is without a doubt the main mode of international transport for all goods transported in the Caribbean, surpassing that of air transport and obviously road transport as illustrated in figure one on the overhead. Now, not only is this critical importance true for the Caribbean, but evidence also suggests that the countries of Latin America are also heavily reliant and dependent on the mode of maritime transport. Figure two on the overhead illustrates that all South American countries carry up to 70 to 100% of their imports via maritime transport, with the exception of probably Paraguay and Bolivia, which are landlocked countries, hence the dependence on land transport. Now, however, the rest of Latin America are heavily dependent on maritime transport, with Brazil, Colombia, Peru, and Venezuela having the highest dependence. Now, because of this, it must be noted that both subregions of Latin America and the Caribbean are heavily dependent on maritime transport, and thus both regions must pay particular attention if growth and development is to be achieved in the 21st century. Now, with regards to Trinidad and Tobago-Venezuela relations, one can conclude that the relations, to a large extent, are cordial, despite trivial relations with regards to the maritime frontier. In this context, only two treaties have been made to delimit the maritime spaces between Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela. The first is the treaty between the UK and the United States of Venezuela in 1942, and in light of the increase in energy exploitation by the two states thereafter led to a further delimitation of the existing boundaries in 1990. In fact, trusted diplomatic activity between the two oil-producing neighbors regarding their maritime frontier has been strengthened yet again recently, reflected in the recent signing of the Unitization of Reserves Accord, a long-awaited agreement to develop natural gas reserves on their maritime border. Trinidad and Tobago's Minister of Energy, Mrs. Bachan, is reported as saying that it is the first of its kind in the region and speaks volumes for how much we as nations and as entire region have matured in cross-border relations. Now, in light of these developments, one can therefore posit that relations between Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela have entered into a new phase despite their traditional distant relations. Therefore, new areas of cooperation must be envisioned, and one of which seems to have great prospects is maritime transport cooperation. Now, the first prospect which I would like to make reference to is that of short sea shipping. Trinidad is situated as the southernmost island of the Caribbean archipelago, and thus sits just above Venezuela, which is situated at the northernmost country on the South American mainland. In fact, to emphasize the close geographic proximity between Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela, it can be noted that both countries are washed by three oceans, the Caribbean Sea, the Gulf of Paria, and Columbus Channel to the south. At the closest point, Trinidad is just 7 miles off the Venezuelan coast, which is actually closer than Tobago, which is approximately 20 miles northeast of Trinidad. Now, in this context, that SSS must be considered as an option to enhance maritime transport relations between Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela. Now, SSS does not have a concise definition that is recognized internationally, but for the purpose of this paper, SSS shall refer to commercial waterborne transportation that does not transit the wider ocean. It is an alternative form of commercial maritime transportation between the ports of a nation as well as between nations and the ports of adjacent countries. Now, a total of 49 ports exist in Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela, of which 13 are in the vicinity of the Gulf of Paria and the Caribbean Sea. Port Cabello and Port La Guerra in Venezuela, and the port of Port of Spain and Port of Point Lisas in Trinidad are the most modern in the vicinity. This provides great opportunities for an SSS to be implemented. An SSS would help to lower transportation costs, which is indeed a major concern related to the maritime transport sector of both countries. Now, if an SSS is to be implemented, then TNT and Venezuela would be able to dictate, let's say, for instance, the costing, the routes, the schedules, etc. Now, in order to access the potential for maritime transport cooperation between the two countries, it is also important to analyze the trade flows between the two countries at a bilateral level. Figure 3 on the overhead illustrates that Trinidad and Tobago imports much more from Venezuela than it exports to Venezuela. As such, it can be noted that TNT does not enjoy a favorable terms of trade with Venezuela. However, as one investigates bilateral trade between the two countries, at a product level, one would appreciate that there is great potential for intra-industry trade, which I refer to as IIT1. That is to say that Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela can exchange products that belong to the same industry, and in this case, the energy sector. In this context, it is therefore no surprise that Trinidad and Tobago's main export to Venezuela is machinery, which amounted for some 45% over the period 2007 to 2009. More specifically, the top commodities that are incorporated into this machinery include tubing and drilling pipes for oil and gas, tanks of iron and steel, petroleum and overhead cranes, all of which furnish the Venezuelan energy sector. Similarly, Venezuela's second largest export to Trinidad and Tobago is machinery, which accounted for approximately 18% over the period 2007-2009. The top commodities included in this machinery include tanks of iron and steel and parts for boring and sinking machinery, among others, again related to the energy sector. Evidence from bilateral trade statistics therefore suggests that there are indeed possibilities for IIT1 between the two oil-producing countries. Thus, when attempting to enhance maritime transport between the two countries, it will be functional to place emphasis on developing an intra-industry maritime trade strategy. And finally, let me move to IIT2, which is increased intra-regional trade. As I stated before, Trinidad is the southernmost island of the Caribbean archipelago, and Venezuela is the northernmost country of South America. And in a broad sense, because of this geographical positioning, it can also be noted that improved maritime relations between the two countries can be the gateway to increased intra-regional trade between Latin America and the Caribbean. Interestingly, Trinidad and Tobago's oldest bilateral partner is Venezuela. Signed in 1992, the CARICOM-Venezuela Agreement on Trade and Investment is a one-way preferential agreement on trade and investment to promote CARICOM exports to Venezuela. Consequently, goods such as spices, byproducts of iron and steel, and propane proceeding from CARICOM countries now have duty-free access into the Venezuelan market of more than 25 million people. Now, what is even more interesting is that in light of the initiative for the integration of regional infrastructure in South America, commonly known as IRSA, prospects seem even greater. This is because once CARICOM goods reach into Venezuela, it will not be easy to transport to other South American countries because of the development of roads and bridges and other physical transport networks across the entire region. Now, in addition, Trinidad and Tobago can act as a transshipment point in trade relations between CARICOM and South America, not only because of its geographic positioning, but also because of its leadership roles in terms of interregional trade. In fact, figure 6 on the overhead illustrates that Trinidad and Tobago already exports to South America the greatest out of all CARICOM countries, surpassing that of Barbados, Jamaica, and Guyana. Effective maritime transport cooperation between TNT and Venezuela therefore has the potential to also unlock the door to increase interregional trade between Latin America and the Caribbean, which indeed has been an elusive goal for the region leaders for over a decade. Now, in conclusion, this paper argues that there is significant potential for enhanced maritime transport between Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela, particularly in the area of a short sea shipping service, which can play an important role in creating the pathway towards both inter-industry trade and increased inter-regional trade. However, for these prospects to be realized, there is need for strong political support from the governments of both countries, as well as the encouragement of partnerships between the main stakeholders in the maritime industry, ports, the shipping agencies, and the business traders themselves. The cooperation of these stakeholders must be concentrated around policy measures related to the development of maritime links, including information sharing among ports and logistics centers, etc. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you.
Thank you again, Mr. Roach, for another elucidating presentation on the importance of maritime transport between Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela to act as a catalyst for increasing interregional trade between Latin America and the Caribbean. Well, I've heard the presentations by Henrik and Kellon, so I now invite you to pose questions. We have approximately 20 minutes for a question and answer session. The mic, yeah, just 1 second at the back. The mic is at the front. Yeah, after, yeah.
Thank you for the presentations. Good afternoon. Karen Roberts, Kasmali, University of the West Indies, MPhil student. It's Sternberg?
Yeah.
Okay, I know that you talked about your study being carried out mainly in the developed countries. And while you were presenting with the perspective from a developed country, but could you tell me why a study like this is important for developing countries, especially in the Caribbean? I mean, we have issues of traffic congestion, but in terms of the large expanse where freight has to move from one area to the next, I think those are not issues, especially for the insular Caribbean that we face. So why is your study important for countries in the Caribbean? And Mr. Roach, I found your presentation very refreshing. Thank you. I want to pose the question to you in terms of Venezuela and Trinidad and Tobago in two aspects. One, Trinidad and Tobago has been accused of, in the past, and I make reference to the OECS and the supposed integration movement. Trinidad and Tobago has been accused of trying to circumvent CARICOM and going off on its own to formulate these trade pacts with other countries. I want to know in terms of, because you made mention to, it could lead to intra-regional trade in the region. So I want to find out how would that work in the context of CARICOM, and then in terms of the maritime issues which Venezuela and Trinidad and Tobago has had in the past, how would that pan out in terms of this proposed agreement? Thank you.
Thank you. I will take one more question before the panel will respond. Go ahead.
Thank you, Henrik. It was very interesting presentation, given the fact that in developing countries, you know, you see very few studies like that. But here, you know, your perspective is from developed country experiences. Now, since there are technological differences, technological level differences between the developed and developing countries, they pose different sets of problems. Like developed country, your transport is highly mechanized, energy intensive, against in developing country where they use more of human labor. So the problem would be more of more from health side than environmental pollution. So similarly, you have different problems. Like another example I would give you, you have shown that in your study that about 60% of cases you had delivery errors. So I want to know whether this was most of this, as I understand, most of this transporter, they use the navigation equipment, which is not found in developing countries. So was it, despite that, this delivery errors were taking place? Of course, in India, you don't have this equipment fitted, but of course, they are increasingly using mobile telephony. So earlier there was no communication network, but now with mobile telephony, this problem is taken care, and maybe even you can fit the navigation map into your mobile telephone that will reduce the cost. So, how would you respond to this kind of comparison between a developed country and a developing country?
Thank you very much. Henrik?
Well, I should have been a bit more clear when I said where the pictures that I showed and the data I collected came from. It was collected from developed countries like Sweden, Germany, and Switzerland, but also from countries like Iran and Turkey. Of course, majority of the observations were carried out in developed countries, but from the data we collected from developing countries, we found that the issues were very similar. If I'm just going to go through a little bit what you were talking about, yes, it's true that in developing countries there is slightly more human labor involved in moving goods, but typically it's the transport process looks very similar in developing countries and non-developed countries, because as long as you're working with a truck, it means that the driver is responsible for loading and unloading unless he is arriving at a terminal where they have equipment. And typically, most goods terminals have equipment, and most other destinations where the drivers go does not have equipment. So that from that point of view, I think, of course, there are differences. You're totally right about that. But when we talk about the basic mentality that these companies are not working on improving themselves, that is a global phenomena, as I'm trying to say. But I'm not saying that some issues are typical even for countries that do not produce industrial goods, because you still have food deliveries and all these things in every country. And I don't from the data I've collected, I have not seen any difference between smaller truck operations with smaller vehicles like the ones that are used in the Caribbean and larger vehicles that are used typically in Northern Europe. So the issue is more of a mentality and and a way that things are made, that they don't change them. And when it comes to technology, yes, it's true that in developed countries you typically have a GPS. I mean, most people have in their personal car as well. But the fact is that the drivers, they don't use that. So it's a kind of, you would say, policy problem or driver mentality, you know. A driver, in no matter what country you're coming to, a driver sees himself as a cowboy, you know, he's independent, he's going to do it without. That's why you can see, for example, several technologies in trucks. Like I was talking with one salesperson for developing countries for Volvo trucks, and she said that actually there are some servo mechanisms that they deliver for the steering wheel, but several countries that the drivers don't want them. Don't want that because it's against, they want to have the image that it's a cool job and, you know, you got to steer a lot, this kind of cowboy thing. So they deliver the trucks without that mechanism, even though the price is the same for the truck. So, well, I admit I did not study trucking operations in the Caribbean field. I would love to do it though. So, but as I said, without having any proof that the same issues apply here, I'm pretty confident they do, because Caribbean is still, I mean, the people here are normal.
Just one sec.
Hi. Yeah. Thanks for your question. The first question, how it work with regards to CARICOM, this proposal of enhanced maritime transport between Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela. Well, in first instance, I think that CARICOM should see it as a plus, and they should see it as an opportunity to exploit the bilateral trade agreement which CARICOM has with Venezuela in the first instance. So I don't think the CARICOM countries should shy away from this kind of arrangement. In fact, in light of the financial crisis has truly underscored the need for Caribbean countries to diversify their exports markets. In terms of 70% of CARICOM exports goes to the US, the UK, and Canada. And in light of the financial crisis, we see the need for us to diversify where our exports go. And a potential market is the South American market, which we already have a free agreement to exploit. In addition to which, I think more South-South cooperation is increasingly being encouraged, especially with the rise of Brazil as one of the emerging economies in the world. With regards to your second question, with regards to border disputes between Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela, and how this sort of arrangement would work, taking into consideration that in the past they had some disputes with regards to their maritime borders. I think the disputes they had with regards to the maritime borders were somewhat trivial, in terms of you may hear issue come up of Trinidad and Tobago fishermen in Venezuelan waters, or Venezuela fishermen in Trinidad and Tobago waters. But I think we've now gone past that distant traditional relationship into a new phase, and I think it will benefit both countries well.
Yes?
Henry. I just want to know about methodology that you are using. That is, in Scandinavian countries, normally that a theory development. So, are you going your research with based on any theory, or you are going to develop any theory? It is a qualitative nature or quantitative nature of research that you are doing.
Just to check if I got your question right. You ask if I am doing quantitative research or qualitative.
Or qualitative.
Well. I'm doing both, but I mean if I look at not only this paper, my largest contribution is actually to better quantify the potential improvements in road transport operations.
Is it based on any theory, or you are going to develop any theoretical model?
Well, I'm basing it up on the, actually I'm using manufacturing methodology I'm using something called zero systems analysis order to evaluate the potential improvement.
Thank you.
Okay, yes.
Because I'm curious about their response to the cost-saving measures that the company owners would essentially gain from your kind of research. And I hear what your response to Carrie Ann's question, but I think one of the things to highlight in that, and also going back to the question, is the fact that it is, well, you pointed out the agreement is between Venezuela and Trinidad, not CARICOM and Trinidad. So in the context of the debate about how Trinidad views CARICOM as a partner to trade to, or a partner to trade with, as in we will partner with CARICOM and trade to Venezuela. So I don't think it's as simplistic as to say CARICOM will benefit, because the argument is already that CARICOM as a whole isn't necessarily benefiting from trade with Trinidad.
Well, I think for CARICOM countries to benefit from this sort of arrangement, there's a need politically to sell this type of arrangement to the different ministries associated with trade in the Caribbean region. But I still don't see it as a deterrence, because CARICOM countries will indeed benefit by increasing their exports to South America. You know, if I got your question correctly, I'm not sure if.
Okay, one final question. Yes.
Quickly, Mr. Roach?
Yes. Yeah? Yes.
Are you, I realize that you're looking heavily at trade and maritime transport for trade purposes in goods, in trading goods.
Yes.
As you were thinking about the research, did you look at movement of people? Just wondering, do you plan to? Just wondering if that's on your agenda.
No, it's not on my agenda right now, but it's a potential area to look at, taking in consideration. Well, I have a big argument with that with regards to CSME trying to, you know, come on board, and we don't have a proper maritime transport system in terms of persons moving around in the regions. It has not been looked at in this study, but is indeed a potential area for me to do some research on, definitely.
Okay, we can talk afterwards.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you, everybody. We have to end the session at this point in time. I want to thank you for, I know it's after lunch, it's difficult to stay awake, but I think you all stayed awake and listened attentively to the two presentations, or the two presenters, but the three presentations. And I also want to thank both Henrik and Kellon for, you know, putting on two very interesting presentations, giving us a different perspective on transportation issues.